Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everybody, welcome to the Nora and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. Today we are talking about the Savage War and calls for readings. And callers may reach us at 914-338-0164. Inviting, as usual, our callers and listeners to join us on Facebook and on Twitter. Those accounts are linked on our Blog Talk Radio profile, Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. It's our homepage, and you can find, again, those accounts there. 562-596-7818 is the number to call for further conversation. And it looks like we're going to have a little bit of time to talk about our topic today, Neil.
That's
the saboteur.
Great. Yeah. Well, there's two definitions, really, to the saboteur. One, we can say that the saboteur exists on the earthly plane within every individual. Every individual has some type of saboteur, meaning that their actions sometimes contradict their desires. They have issues. They might have psychological issues, emotional issues, self-esteem, attitudes of fear, trepidation. Sometimes it's even ego. Sometimes it's even arrogance. But we all have this element, this personality within us that would be considered the saboteur, that would otherwise confuse our life, stop us from doing things, or once we're doing them, completely dismantle them, destroy them. That's what our saboteur does in this lifetime. It can be rooted from poor childhood teachings and behaviors. Oftentimes, people who have very strong saboteurs experienced harsh childhood. And they've internalized those feelings within themselves. So what they do is that
they repeat the
energy. They actually become their own perpetrator.
Well, I was thinking about this earlier today, and the fact that, of course, the saboteur can be born on the earth plane, but also it can be an issue of past life activity.
That's the second.
So go ahead.
Well,
sorry, I didn't mean to.
Well,
go there
we
too
even
quickly.
Get there, since we have a little time before we even get there, you have to consider what is the saboteur. What is one saboteur composed of in this lifetime? What is it that you do, or what a person does, that would otherwise stop something from happening or ruin something that's from happening? Sometimes it's such a sheer emotion that people find that they ruin their relationships because of their anger or their distrust. Somebody does something that upsets them, and it goes into an outburst. I'm reminded of Joan Crawford and that scene with the clothes hangers, when she just has this emotional outburst to her child. Those are saboteurs. Saboteurs just always don't upset one's own personal life. A saboteur can invade the environment around them and thereby hurt what they really love or what they really are trying to connect to. So we have this element that is composed of different emotions and experiences, basically from childhood, that's called the saboteur. I know when I worked in the hospital, I dealt with this pretty extensively
I'm sure, because I'm sure a lot of the patients that you were dealing with were there because of that
fact. That very fact. So what we would do in psychodrama is we would separate the saboteur from the person and have somebody else play the saboteur. So we would actually have another human being playing the role of the person saboteur, so that person can see in the flesh the dialogue, the actions, and have a conversation. I mean, you don't need to go into a psychodrama dynamic to do that, but it can be very effective. So we have this element, and it's a psychological, earthly dilemma, but it's one that should be addressed. Anyone who feels they self-destruct or they
tracing the roots of why they would self-destruct will help to maybe circumvent that type of behavior.
Sure, in therapy or but what also is that you could call the saboteur, well, it's sabotaging your life. And just a lot of people do it. It's weird because a lot of powerful people have a saboteur. I mean, look at, it can get into obsessions. Look at Bill Clinton in the White House. Or now, you know, the stuff that Trump's going through. When we talk about presidents, people who ultimately can't rest with being noble. They can't rest with being assertive. There's something about the saboteur that feeds on power. And then power, when the saboteur is involved, the results are usually corruption, but at the hands of one's own ego. So when we get into the element of the saboteur, we get into the element of what's the basic ingredients of one's ego? What is it made of? And if somebody's noble and well-mannered and well-put-together, balanced, healthy, they're not going to have so much of a saboteur unless it's really subtle. I've dealt with clients and patients who their saboteur was so well hidden that it only came out in extensive therapy, where they would have feelings of low self-esteem or something they felt guilty about. That was so buried in their psyche, but yet available to their consciousness, that the way it seeped out, there would be subtle sabotage going on. Even if it was in mild forms of depression or repression or stagnation, or somebody could be in love with somebody and then they don't answer them for a week. And the other party's getting really upset, and it leads into an argument. That's a sabotage element, especially saboteurs will basically also use excuses for their behavior, and that helps to justify their energy of being a saboteur within themselves, because it perpetuates the cycle, and they can't get out of it, so they're somewhat trapped. It's like any trap. The more you will in a web, the more you become entangled. So this saboteur is something that we can deal with just on a purely, before we even get, like you mentioned, to the psychic level, the past life level. It's something that should be addressed by anybody who's having problems in their life and finding themselves having self-destructive modes of behavior, that they have to address with this, their own saboteur.
Right. So you mentioned people in power. I just wanted to briefly speak on that, because people like Bill Clinton, President Trump, they're a little different, obviously, Bill Clinton and Trump. But when you talk about
with the affairs.
No, I know you're dealing with affairs. But, when you get into people in power, such as people in the clergy who self-sabotage, and then, you know, they're not only affecting themselves, but a great number of people, you know, sexual abuse. So people can be saboteurs, and they can be limited in the circle of people that they affect, you know, maybe their friends and family, because they're sabotaging themselves on an individual level. Obviously, that's going to affect other people, but then the saboteur can be not only a saboteur of self, but sabotaging other people directly, like sexually abusing somebody. So
it
can
reach
further, you know, it can be more damaging than just to the individual.
Sure.
Him or herself.
Yeah, in terms of the decline of one's own existence, there's usually casualties. Usually there's casualties. Even if the casualties are just affected by the downfall of one's behavior.
Yeah.
And that brings up another idea about the saboteur, is that a saboteur will kind of go, they'll wrap their arms around obsession. So there's an obsessive quality to the saboteur, because obsession is when you have this overreaction to something and it becomes repetitive and release yourself from it.
Well, that's why addiction comes into the main picture of that sabotage, because an obsessive compulsive type of behavior.
Sure. So the saboteur can reach levels of toxicity that can be quite dramatic. Yeah, it seems we have a call, but the right number, but kind of the wrong number. But so the idea of obsession, when you have obsession, is a pedophile, within the realm of a pedophile, of course, that's a person with a very sick energy, very, very sick and toxic and horrible. But could there be sabotage in there? Well, certainly. I mean, the idea of a sabotage, the headline of being a saboteur doesn't always necessarily compile itself with being an obsessive compulsive person, because you can be obsessive compulsive and still not be a saboteur. But a saboteur, the trick to the saboteur is that it's destructive. There's something very destructive about it. And it's like if you were building something in your front yard and somebody constantly came by and put bombs around it, threw rocks at it, you have to think that's the saboteur. Saboteur is usually basically a war term. Sabotage, saboteur. And, you know, the guy that puts the bomb on the submarine. Well, we can abstract ourselves and put bombs and devices of destruction within our own system, because we're unbalanced. Now we're getting into the idea of being unbalanced chakras, and now we're getting into
more
the idea
of esoteric saboteur.
That's a good term, the esoteric saboteur, because there can be a level, karmically speaking, where the saboteur is birthed from the soul,
right?
From the body, not from the experience of life immediately in one's existence. But the saboteur hitched a ride onto the body via the soul and is now within the new body, but the saboteur resides in the soul of the human being.
Right, and so people that have even an ideal childhood, and there's no way to trace trace on a physical level why they would become such a sabotaging person, that's really... can trace it back to the past life of your skilled person, obviously.
You know, there was an interesting situation, Kristen, that I went to a house and this kid was totally destructive. And the psychiatrists and psychologists and therapists that were examining the child previously couldn't figure out what it was. They were looking at the brain chemistry. They were looking at emotional. They were looking at the house, the domestic dynamics, the family interactions. No one could come up with anything. And that was kind of despairing, because if they had found something, they could have treated it. But no one could find anything. So I got a call to go to the house. And when I got there, I observed a child. My God, I was stunned. The child was so self-destructive. Now, In children who are traumatized or who have an imbalance in their brain or something can exhibit such behaviors. But this was already checked out. This was checked out the background was already checked out. No one had found anything. And even the best doctors who usually find what others can't find, they were stunted. They couldn't figure out what was wrong. Well, when I got to the house, and I was already prepared to deal with this child because the parents told me about it and also told me about the background with the doctors and the therapists. So now they reach out to the psychic skills in psychology. And I'm looking at this kid thinking, oh my God. I mean, the kid was totally out of line. But what I decided to do, and the parents observed this because I wanted them, I was with the child for like a minute or two, just watching him. He wasn't paying much attention to me, you know. But then I invited the parents to come in. And I said, okay, you know, I'm a psychic. You know, there's going to be some weird things maybe that I'm going to do, but you're going to have my approach with the understanding that maybe, no, whatever. With the kid was I opened up my third eye and I looked at the kid, and this kid morphed in front of me into like demon figures. I mean, oh my God.
Which doesn't necessarily mean the kid is a demon.
No.
So,
no, I didn't feel like, oh my God, get the Catholic priest in
here. Let's
do an
exorcism time.
The kid's possessed. What I recognized in the child was the child's own, quote, demons, not demons from the underworld, but the child was tormented by energy from past lives where he lived as an adult and was a rapist and murderer. I mean,
he had very dark past lives, you're saying.
And the only way to validate what this was to say to the psychic, well, what are you seeing? And the psychic says, I'm seeing the kid is boiling over with past life energies.
Would you remember you're not going to probably
remember specifically
the birth date, but or master number, was it compounded?
No, and I don't remember anything like that. I don't. But this was 25 years ago, almost 30 years ago.
Yeah, I wasn't even born yet.
No, you weren't. Yeah.
Just kidding.
Yeah. I wasn't even born yet. I don't know what I was doing.
Okay.
I said, okay. Went out of the room. I said, here's my theory. I'm seeing with my third eye that this kid is filled with like demons. And they said, oh my God, we never thought of doing an exorcism. I go, not those kind of demons. But you would think by looking at the kid,
with your third eye.
I mean, wasn't going, wasn't growling or anything, and he wasn't spitting up green bile, but the kid was acting crazy.
It was orange bile.
Yeah. Yeah, Tang. He was Tang. So I said, you know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to communicate to the child through the third eye. And the child was never responded. So I went back into the room, and with my third eye, I locked the child into my eyes. Now, this became a sort of hypnotic scene where a man is looking at a child, and they're both staring at each other like they're having a staring contest. Now, I could see in my peripheral vision that the parents were like, oh my God, what's going on? I've never seen this before. This is weird. And I said to the child with my third eye through communication, you know, what do you call it? Channeling, communication, telepathy.
Telepathy.
I understand you. I understand who you've been. And I know you've been this and this and this in past lives. I even said a name. And the child was looking back at me and with tears just pouring down his face. So, and the child was old enough. The child was like between 4 and 5. So we could understand language, basic language, but we could talk. The child was rather intelligent. The child read books and stuff. And I said, I'm talking to your past life energies. Now, I wasn't talking to demons. I was talking to the psyche of the child's soul. And fortunately, what I was able to do was use my energy. I guess it was like an exorcism, but not really. But I was able to use my energy and speak to those individuals. And somehow, I don't know how I did it, but I extracted the energy of this negative, these negative past lives from this kid's soul. Yeah, I guess I did it through this gut feeling I had, through strong visualization, through power, energy. I just willed it. And the child relaxed and came over and gave me a hug. So, I mean, I get a little bit emotional thinking about it because I'm a kind of emotional guy, but, you know, and then I cried and hugged the parents, and then they cried and hugged their parents, and it went on and on. But anyways, it's a true story.
So was that the only time? Because you've never actually told me this story before, so it's a new one. you recycle a lot of the old ones. No. What was the result of that visit? I mean, did you do continuing therapy with the child and the family?
A little bit. The child, a little bit. But I didn't. It wasn't an issue of the family dynamic. I didn't have to tell the parents. The parents were lovely people. I didn't have to do anything with the parents. The kid didn't have any learning disabilities. The kid was plagued with a past life personalities. You know, in classical therapy, multiple personalities, bipolar. I mean, these doctors came up with everything, but nobody could
really identify what the
and there was no treatment.
Core of the problem was.
Nothing was working. So obviously this worked.
And
it worked immediately.
I wonder if you hadn't intervened, what would have happened psychologically to that child as the child grew up. He probably would have developed really a more serious psychological disorder.
Probably. In fact, when the child was 9, I got a call from the parents. And they said to me, he's doing fine. I'm just letting you know, he's 9 years old. He's in the, I think he was in the fifth grade.
Fourth, probably.
Fourth is usually.
Nine. Yeah.
When I was 8, I was in the third grade. So, yeah, maybe
third
it's fourth
grade.
Yeah,
exactly. Goes up 1 year.
Fourth grade. I thought he was in the fifth, but so
maybe he was
10. And they said he's doing wonderful.
Or maybe he was advanced.
They said he remembers you. And he writes stories. He draws. His first drawing's amazing. And we haven't had any problems. Okay. So that's dramatic, right? But to bring out that story in terms of the saboteur being in the soul, you're never going to be able to help somebody if you don't reach into the soul and embrace the idea of past lives. And to talk to an individual on some level on that topic, there's not going to be.
Well, good luck finding that in any, medical application.
Well,
psychological.
You'd have to be an extremely talented psychologist, extremely talented, that doesn't buy into past life stuff, but would be so extremely talented that
and
maybe
perceptive,
by,
there would be an intuitive.
They could psychologically exercise some of this energy. I'm skillful. I couldn't have done it without
the third
use
eye.
Of the third eye and recognizing that this child. And the things that I was saying that the past life individuals did in this child afterward, the parents who had watched this whole incident said, you're saying things that he does. Yeah, he takes fingernails, jams them into his hand. We have to hide them. And you mentioned that. And that was not said before, nothing like that. So sometimes you get these. You see, with demons, you'll get a lot of nonsense. I dealt with demons in people, and demons will say, your mother is this, you know, and they say all this nonsense stuff. and they can be very perceptive and say things about you
that are accurate.
You know, your dog Coco is dead in the street. You better run home.
Well, and that brings up another, I mean, a lot of people that are psychics are connecting to lower entities, not really a higher entity. And we'll get some accurate information.
They might, yeah.
But that's a different topic, obviously.
I've dealt with demons, like in The Exorcist. I've dealt with demons that have said things to me that I knew was bullshit. When you're dealing with an individual that is not obsessed, doesn't have this plague of demons, real demons in them, then you're not going to get that kind of dialogue. There's no nonsense going on. They usually don't even attack you. You're just looking at a person that is troubled within their own psyche with past life identities. So they're not really possessed by demons. Demons is a whole different story. Demons have their own difficult drama for somebody such as myself who would go in and try to get rid of a demon in a person. Not that I'm a Jesuit priest or anything, or I'm equipped to do that, but in my own world, on my own gut level, I know what I can do. And so when I've gotten rid of demons in people, that's a whole different story. Now, can a demon prompt somebody to be a saboteur? Absolutely. So can demons connect to human beings in such a way that now, just as a demon energy, the person is sabotaging their lives? Yes, that can happen. I saw that happen with one woman who she took acid, and a demon entered her, and now this was causing her to be crazy. I even had a friend who went on an acid trip.
Oh, yeah, he completely declined,
lived on the streets, ultimately died on the streets. And yet demons can also be clothed in white. Demons can, you know, some people, and I don't mean to excuse schizophrenia or anything like this, but some people who have demons are the ones shouting about the end of the world in the streets and Christ is coming and all this stuff and the apocalypse. Not that some of those people aren't just in tune with turmoil and they're mixing it up with a psyche that is kind of crazy. Maybe they are schizophrenic. Maybe they're very rational. But a demon can seem to be like a human being in white clothing and say these wonderful things. Think about who was that guy that had the cult and everybody was drinking?
Jim Jones.
And then there's the other guy. I forget their names. I know who I'm talking about. But
wait, you're drinking the punch is Jim Jones.
Yeah,
so you're thinking
Jim
of
Jones,
another cult.
But there was another one where I think it was in Texas or somewhere.
Oh, you mean the Waco thing?
Yeah. Well, there's that. But there's cults where the human being acts like a big high priest and he says these beautiful things. Charles Manson. I mean, people who is just, did Charles Manson have a demon? I don't think Charles Manson had a demon, but I think he conversed with such dark energy. And God knows he had a horrible childhood, horrible. So that compacted him. But does everybody who have a horrible childhood?
It compacted him. He shrunk. He became a midget.
And he also was also constipated, from what I heard. Listen, I'm using language, and I'm starting to get older. So
no, that's okay. So, you know, speaking of, well, not compacting, but compounding, you know, obviously in the case of this child, that's a pretty extreme example of being, well, I mean, it's not an extreme example, but it's rare that someone has a qualified person intervene at a young age. You know, I don't know how they got connected with you, but.
I forget that they knew somebody. It was word of mouth. I'm not sure, but.
But I mean, you know, a lot of times.
It's past life connection. Did I have a past life connection with this child? Maybe it was possible. You know, I wasn't. part of my job at that moment was to solve this kid, to help this kid. I wasn't concerned. No, did I have a past life with him? Let's go into that now. I did. Wasn't my immediate concern, but there could have been a tribal thing going on. I know that in past lives I've gone through several tribal energies and seen a lot of things that my soul retains. And I recall some of those things. But in terms of the saboteur essence, yeah, we can talk about several. There's several dramatic stories. But
right.
I think
and
we have a caller.
We
right
do
now,
have a caller. So. But after we take the call, what I was going to say is that, you know, in the case of this young person that you dealt with, there was no traceable evidence of anything causing in the physical realm. But oftentimes there's going to be a mix of the soul's history and things that occur on the physical level, because a lot of times these individuals will be dealing with karma that they brought from the past life, which will cause this, you know, a situation to manifest where they will have both a physical and soul problem.
You get a rat stow away on a ship, and what do you have? You have all kinds of stuff in the food. People can get sick. I mean, a past life stowaway, a stowaway in a body, can bring to the body all kinds of things that are very toxic and also in the environment of the individual.
Okay, let's bring this caller on. 519, hi.
Well, hi, Ben. I don't really have a question, but I just want to make a comment regarding what Neil's speaking about.
Okay.
Okay. I went into my son's, I was learning how to do the whole healing thing, and I went into my son's aura once, and there was a guy that was right inside of his aura and it looked like a total pedophile. So I managed to send him away. But then I asked my son after, I said, do you ever feel like there's someone watching you? He looks at me and he says, all the time. I said, and then he said, and touching me. And I went, oh my God. So then 2 weeks later, I said, you know, do you still feel that someone's watching you and touching you? And he said, no.
Yeah. Well, the physical manifestations of this energy can be experienced from within. So the intensity of an entity or a spirit or a past life can be so strong that it actually, you can feel it from within and then you can feel it from without. I mean, one of the best noble indications of this, if you want to call it noble or not, is when a woman's pregnant and she can feel the baby moving, and it's kind of a part of her. Now, if we take that analogy and we take it into the aspect of an internal energy, an internal entity within a human being, they can have feelings within and without, as opposed to some other kind of entity that is just within a human being's astral field, not inside their body, but inside their astral field. Now, they can touch a human being from the outside, and that energy can go inside too, like a mosquito bite. It's like a serum. So, but you know, if we get a mosquito bite, is the mosquito in us because of the venom or the bacteria? Or is a mosquito outside of us? It's kind of like the chicken and the egg. Once an entity influences us, sometimes it's hard to separate the inside from the outside, because they both, there's a manifestation of a presence that can cause all kinds of things. And if it gets into the way of an individual psyche, then they can feel, the energy itself can tell the individual, you're itching, your back itches, I'm touching you. In other words, the energy can dictate to the individual how to feel. And the feeling can be so intense that it's at least real on a level of the psyche. But it may also be very real on the level of the physicality, not just the psyche. This is when you get people who wake up and they have weird markings on their bodies or designs that occur, scabs that look like faces and things like that one might say, well, that's just nonsense. but there, I've done readings with people who have actually manifested on their things that can't be explained. Now, that can also be intent that is part of this touching and things like that. But when it's removed, then it's removed. And yes, then it's gone. And so I don't know.
Yeah, we don't even know who we're speaking to. What's your name?
It's Jennifer, and it's cutting up. I can't hear anything, but it's probably my stupid phone. So.
Oh.
Well, you could hear us before, couldn't you?
I could, but the reception on this is terrible.
Right,
so.
But before you called in, you could hear.
Oh, yeah, I could.
Yeah, so it's your
before
phone.
You brought me in.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how much you heard, but
yeah, listen to the play. I mean, you can listen to the.
I
don't need to repeat it. You can listen to the archive.
I gotta remember.
And even as like a psychic, like Neil could probably have gone into that boy's energy or aura and known if it had been if it was something physical as well. So I don't know why doctors beat their or. Try all these different things when there's other modalities that they can use to figure things out quicker and better.
Well, doctors,
well, they don't
doctors are not going to
use the third eye.
Yeah. And they're, you know, some doctors are so turned off by anything psychic or mediums. I mean,
because they're, you know, their training is totally based in logic.
And logically, they're right. I mean, that's they should feel that way, but there are doctors who go deeper, you know. So it's just a matter of their training and their beliefs. But even a doctor, you know, when you think about it, Jennifer, even a doctor will say, you know, there's nothing more we can do. We just will place it in the hands of God. Well, doctors aren't supposed to say that. They're doctors. But whether they say God, Jesus, Moses, Buddha, they're using something that is not within the medical profession. You know, take 3 doses of prayer. You know, I think you should go home and take 3 and do 3 prayers a night and your cold should go away. Doctors aren't going to say that.
No.
So, but yet doctors will resort to their own beliefs when they're bemuddled, when they can't figure something out. So it just all depends, but in terms of your child, things can be removed, and the immediacy of that removal can have wonderful results. If you know what you're doing, you really recognize you're not crazy yourself, and you really see a problem, and you recognize it, and then it's over. It's done with. So, you know, and then you don't want to disturb a gifted child either that is going through a lot of trauma. So you have to kind of combine the psyche with the soul. And so because you don't want to disturb something that may be necessary. And sometimes that's more therapy where you channel a child's anger or a child's erratic behavior into something constructive. And you're not considering that you need to remove something in order to make the child better. You have to moderate. You have to reconstruct the child's energy in such a way that that's done through play therapy and art therapy and readings and discussions and things like that. Sometimes and oftentimes medication. I don't know if I'm cutting out or...
Does Jennifer want to respond? Can you hear us?
Oh, I can hear you now. I moved to a different part of the house. I agree. And sometimes you have to, because everybody's different, right? You have to go through and try different things. But as far as I'm concerned, drugs are the absolute last resort. And then even when they're on drugs, keep working to find something that's not drug-related. But I just find the doctors here just, first thing's the prescription.
Well, yeah, a lot of times they're, you know, in the pocket of the pharmaceutical companies. So you know, that's a big problem.
Well, you know, I mean, prescriptions have their own history and their own benefits, and they're, thank God we have them, because they do help, and they
right,
do save lives.
Right, but I think putting a child on like Ritalin or Adderall is not really a good option ever. I just don't agree with it personally. But.
I'm with you, Kristen.
Yeah.
Okay, but, I can't hear, but I'm going to hang up. I'm going to listen in on the computer. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, Jennifer. Okay, we're going to keep her on mute. Anyway, as we were saying, it's not always as dramatic as the case with the child. You know, it doesn't surface as dramatically where their parents are calling in doctors and psychics and so on and so forth. And
no.
And then if there's not a dramatic incident in childhood and things are more subtle, then the problem may become more deep in terms of how it manifests.
Sure.
In a person's life.
It can be such a journey that you're traveling through a human being's psyche and figuring things out and finally finding that saboteur. The saboteur is a hunt. Saboteurs usually hunt to cause destruction. In my estimation, you sometimes have to hunt to find the saboteur within a person. Sometimes that's on a physical level, meaning it just immediately in one's lifetime. And sometimes it goes deeper into more of an esoteric astral realm type thing where you're looking into the soul. I mean, even that is hard to define. How do you look into the soul of someone? People say you look into their eyes and you can feel a person and the soul of someone. But how do you accurately read a soul? I mean, that's a whole discussion in and of itself. How do you find a soul through the third eye and then read it? That's more difficult.
Okay, let's bring on our caller. 347.
Hi, hello.
Hi, hello. Who's this, please?
This is Latima.
Latima?
Yes.
L-A-T-I-M-A?
Yes, L-A-T-I-M-A.
Okay, where are you calling? Is this New York number?
Yes, I'm calling from New York.
And your birth date?
7/16/92.
Okay. What's your question?
I just want to know, I'm kind of in a situation with a guy, and I found out that he was interested in the past with a guy. And I'm not trying to be judgy or anything, but this is like new to me. And I'm kind of
bisexual?
Yeah, and I'm just finding this out.
Okay. Do you know his birth date, Latima?
December 1st.
I'm sorry, say it again?
27. December 1st.
December 1st?
December. I'm sorry, December 1st. Yeah,
and
1990.
He's 27. So he would be born in 1990, right?
2017.
No, he would be born in 1990 because he's turning 28.
He's 27 now?
Yes.
Yeah, he's turning 28.
He's 2017.
We're just doing a little calculation.
2017 minus
23. He's a 23.5. 23.5. So this is not something you're used to. You know, I had a friend in the past who experienced this, where she was dating this guy and she found out the guy had experiences with other men. She flipped out. I mean, it was actually kind of ridiculous to me. She was very dramatic about it, really angry and, you know, concerned. But there are reasons for concern. I mean, you know, in any case, you want to make sure that the person has been,
Because I'm kind of like not want to go. I don't want to go forward with this situation. And I feel bad for him because it's like he keeps crying. And I'm just like, oh, no, I can't do it.
It's hard to hear you. Are you having a hard time
hearing her? Well, I'm okay. Joelle, is this her boyfriend?
This is someone you're interested in, right?
Yeah.
So the person you're interested in, you found out is bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you know, I've done readings in the past where the wife has children and she finds out that her husband has been driving around and sleeping around with and finding men. You know, I have to go out and get something and he drives around and he was having sex with men that anywhere. He met online and they go and meet. And then she found out that her husband was having sex with men, indiscriminate sex. That's dramatic. I mean, that's pretty dramatic. You know, we're living, it's weird. We're living at a time right now, and you're born in 1990, where
it's more common to be.
Bisexuality is becoming bisexual. Like, you know, homosexuality, lesbians, that it today it's in the kind of, it's for, I mean, there's still bigotry and there's still discrimination and violence and all that. But we're also living in a day where the where sexuality is becoming more of the fabric of society. So, you know, girlfriends in high school holding hands, guys holding hands in high school even. There's a general more of an acceptance. So when we get into the idea that sex, you know, you have the sex, you enjoy, a male enjoys a male body, a male enjoys a female body, or vice versa with females. A female enjoys a female body. A female enjoys a male body. They don't. They find pleasure in both things. Now, if you're, it's not so much that. It's about monogamy. You know, is the person prepared to be with you, Latima, and to be settled with you? Because whether this person likes a male or a female, if this person is so in love with you that this person has made a choice to be exclusive to you, then, you know, that's one thing to consider.
Well, yeah.
Unless you feel uncomfortable with the fact that they're also drawn to men.
I think another thing to consider is how much that predominates, whether the attraction to men versus the attraction to women. Because if this is a man who is attracted to women but really is more attracted to men, then that might come into play, whether or not that person is monogamous to her. I mean, that can be a distracting element.
Yeah.
Because, you know, going into, they're monogamous 2 years into the relationship, and the guy says, you know what, I am really more a homosexual than I am heterosexual. That's where it can present a problem.
But, you know, back in time, this drama would be like a white guy falling in love with a black woman or with a Japanese woman. Wow, that was like, oh boy, don't go on the bus together. You know, we tend to think that because we don't live under the norm of sexuality, that something's threatening. Can we say that if we look at the historical notion of sexuality, a 50-year-old in love with a 20-year-old, a white man in love with a black woman, a white man in love with a Japanese woman, or vice versa, these are odd things too. Now we have a man or a woman that loves both sexes. I mean, the bottom line, I think, is...
it's the content of the person that she's involved with, not his attraction to men.
Yeah, that. And we can't deny sexuality. I mean, this is history. This is now part of life. We have to accept it. There's nothing we can do about it. But if you want an individual, Latima, that is exclusively drawn to women... And then, therefore, is exclusively drawn to you, then you're not going to have a conflict. If you love this person and you're trying to figure out what to do with this person, then there's got to be a good rational discussion with the person. Well, do you feel, if you're with me, that you're still going to be attracted to men and that I have to compromise you, my relationship with you over that? You know, I mean, girls... girls, notoriously, girls, even when I was growing up,
girls are much more comfortable. Oh, she's beautiful. Oh, she's a girl will say a girl is beautiful and be okay with it. And in Japan, girls hold hands. It doesn't mean anything. If a guy says to his friend, oh, I think that guy's really handsome. It's like back in those days, oh my God, you must be gay. What's wrong with you? It's a general attitude thing. But what you got to do is get down to the basics of talking to this person and figuring out where their foundation really is and what they really want. Because you may be attracted to this person. But oh, you did?
And what?
Yeah,
he's saying
he just answered me, and that was like a mistake because the guy was actually dressing as a female, and he got tricked.
I don't know. I see that to me. Yeah, I don't know if I believe that. He said that the guy was dressing as he got tricked into being with this guy because he was dressed as a girl, which I don't know. I mean, there's some good cross dressers. I mean, that look like really look like women, but that seems a little bit fishy to me.
Well, maybe. There's a lot of guys that pick up girls on the streets that are.
Wait a second, Latima. He admits to being attracted to other men.
No, I actually spoke on the phone with the girl, and she was acting like she was a female, and she just came out and just said, like, I'm really a guy. And I seen her on social media. She looked like she was a female. She did, but you can tell some manly parts about her.
Well, let me ask you this, because it's not clear. When you originally came on, you said that the man that you were with is attracted to men. Right.
Yeah. Because he found out it was a man, and he still had a relationship with the man who was just a female for 3 years.
So
they call yourself a trainee.
Females. I mean, some men are attracted to men who are make themselves up to be beautiful women, but they have a penis, and that somehow gets into the man, and they love it. They find it totally attractive. It's the way the brain works.
And that's weird to me. That's how I don't like it.
Yeah, then you're not comfortable with it. I mean,
you need to find a more conventional.
Yeah.
You need a more conventional man. You don't judge this guy, but don't confuse your life and bring more problems into your life. If this man now is drawn to men or she-males or whatever it may be, don't complicate your life. There's other, you know, fishes in the sea. I hate that phrase, but there's other men.
I mean, how attached are you to this guy? How attached are you?
Not so much attached now. I found this out like last week, so I'm not really that attached to him. But he's making himself so attached to me. He said I'm helping him move all over the past from this. So I'm confused now. So he's so emotional towards me. Like, it's like draining me out. He's so emotional. He's draining me out.
Well, you really have to check your boundaries. And if he may be getting benefit out of this, but if it's causing you problems, you really have to think first of yourself.
Yeah.
You can't be his therapist at the cost of your own sanity. No.
Mm-hmm. So, and we have another caller. I don't think we're going to be able to take. What do you think?
Unless
we take real quick, but we're going to have a phone call coming in. So, Latima, you are welcome to get in touch with us since we didn't have a ton of time with you. We're back on the air on Wednesday, and we're going to take this other caller. But hopefully, that helps you, and you know, you can connect with us on Facebook, and perhaps follow the show so you're able to be notified of when the next show is on. Okay?
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. This is going to be short. 614.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. I'm calling because I have some coworkers, and they invited me out to lunch. And I was wondering if it was a genuine request or is it like a pity thing?
A coworker that was asking you out to lunch?
Yeah, group of them.
And a group of coworkers asked you out to lunch, and you're wondering if they really want to be your friend or if they're being insincere? Well, why would you think that, first of all? Why would you think they would be insincere? What basis? do you have for feeling that way?
Because I don't speak at all. I'm like a really quiet person, almost like I'm not there. So it's just odd to me.
What's your name?
Silson.
What is it?
Silson.
Oh, yeah. Phil. We spoke with you. Yeah. Silson, we spoke with you about your
career
a couple weeks ago. F-I-L-S-U-N, is that right? Or S-A-N?
S-A. Yes.
Yeah. S-A-N. And what's your birth date again?
May 12, 1994.
Okay. 5, 6, 7, 8, 18. 31. I mean, I would say... I mean, what's your fear? I would say go out to lunch with them. I mean, you know, why not? I don't think they're going to, like, stone you.
a guy at her
no,
work?
No, it's a group.
Oh, a group
yeah.
at her work wants her to go out to lunch
yeah.
with them?
Yeah, and she's worried. She doesn't know if they're being
sincere
or if they're going to ostracize you once you're in the group or something like that.
Well, is it possible they could be playing a trick on you? I mean, do they seem like mean people? Do they have a cult within work? Are they malicious?
No.
Maybe they just want you to feel welcomed. What's wrong with human beings being compassionate and compelling enough to want to bring somebody into their fold because they're sensitive? You know, this is about your self-worth. God, you're asking us as psychics, do we see anything happen? I don't think we see anything happening.
I don't think we see.
I mean,
no, I would say go out to lunch with them. I mean,
you know,
I know it's probably difficult if you're not a person that's really social to accept an invitation like that, but I would say, like, you know, that might be a good opportunity for self-growth.
What did they say? Did they say, would you like to join us for lunch? We're going to this restaurant?
Yes.
What? Well, have they ever made fun of you before?
No.
What kind of an area do you work in? What do you do?
Technical support.
Well, do they usually, you know, maybe they just want, I don't know. You seem like you're very quiet, and so you're very cautious about this because you're quiet. You're not accustomed to people you like this. But you got to start somewhere, Hassan. You got to start somewhere. You have to start somewhere and take a chance. And so we're encouraging you to do that and call us back.
And let us know.
And let us know how it went.
Yeah, you caught us at the end of the show. We're actually over right now. But get in touch with us again a little earlier in the show, and we'll spend a little more time with you, okay?
Okay.
Okay, take care. Good luck. And we are on air again Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern. Have a great Labor Day, everybody. Bye-bye.